You're listening to Security Squad. Episode 1 for 2008, Massive Storm Attack, Seer Spyware, and the Evolution of NAC.
Companies still don't get that this isn't what customers want. What, you know, this isn't the kind of interaction they're looking for from their retailers.
Yeah, but these customers apparently want it.
If you're an enterprise and you don't know whether or not NAC is going to have a tangible benefit for you, then why spend tens of thousands of dollars with a smaller third-party vendor?
A couple of years ago, the going thought was everybody's going to eat this up. Everybody's going to want a NAC appliance. That hasn't really been the case, though.
Welcome to Security Squad. I'm Rob Westervelt. This is our first episode of 2008, and today we're going to talk about a few of the interesting security issues that stood out shortly after the new year. First is the debate over spyware. Sears is the latest company to use spyware on its website, supposedly. We'll have a discussion about that. Next, we'll look at botnet sophistication, the continued dominance of Storm, and ask the question that's really been asked at the beginning of every year. Could 2008 be the year of a massive cyber attack? Also, we'll discuss network access control. NAC, as it's known, has been experiencing some slow growth, and one NAC vendor appears to be signaling a change to its strategy, and even a name change, and Bill will have something on that. And finally, Apple. The U.S. Army is buying more Macs. Will they become more of a target as a result? With me today is CertSecurity.com site editor Eric Parizeau. And Eric, I know you and your team are constantly busy making security schools. Why don't you talk a little bit about what a security school is and really what the latest, some of the latest topics are around that?
Sure, Rob. Just to keep it real brief, security schools are our online seminars, if you will. They're free learning experiences for any CertSecurity.com member that wants to brush up on certain areas of security. IAM or threat management or any of a number of topics. In January, our new lesson is going to be on compliance, and it's going to be featuring Dick Mackey of System Experts. And in February, we've got another lesson coming up, and it's going to be featuring Mike Chappell, one of our regular experts.
Great. Next is Dennis Fisher. He's executive editor of CertSecurity.com and Information Security Magazine. Dennis, you sat down recently with Art Coviello of EMC's RSA Security Division. Why don't you talk a little bit about, well, you know that RSA has recently undergone a little bit of downsizing, some layoffs. Talk a little bit, about what the mood was and what Coviello was trying to get across.
He was very upbeat. And the interesting thing was, even though they did have some layoffs, they're not disclosing how many exactly because it's not really material to the size of the company or to EMC right now. He made the point several times that RSA actually has more people on board by several hundred right now than they did when EMC acquired them a year and a half or 2 years ago, whatever it was now, almost 2 years ago. And they're still growing. They're still hiring. They've got somewhere between 100 and 200 people over in India right now, an engineering team. They've got a lot of engineers that they're looking to hire. So he was very upbeat. He was very sort of bullish on 2008 and what it held for the company and the security industry at large, both in terms of what RSA is going to be doing to integrate their own technology into EMC's technology and the way that they're partnering with outside companies to bring stronger security to their customers.
It's interesting because the email I recently got from the PR folks over there was that, you know, we may expect more downsizing coming up in the future.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things that PR people like to put in their emails just in case something happens so that they don't look foolish afterwards. And I think with a company, any company of that size, you can almost always expect some downsizing here and there as things go along, especially a company that likes to make acquisitions as RSA does. You buy a company of any size, you know, 1,000, 2,000 people, they're going to have redundant CFOs and back office people that just, you know, don't need to hang around after the fact.
Great. And finally, senior news writer Bill Brenner. How you doing, Bill?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Bill, you wrote a story on Veneer Networks possibly undergoing a name change, and we're going to talk about that later in the program. But why don't you just tell us briefly a little bit about what that's about?
Sure, they're actually not. It's official. They're going to do it. They're changing their name to, to Autonomic, and they're also going to have a change in direction. Though right now they're not saying what that is. They're planning an official rollout sometime in the first quarter of this year. But the you know, talking to some analysts yesterday, the main message that I got was that this is an example of a company that jumped into what has become a very crowded market for NAC. A couple of years ago, the going thought was everybody's going to eat this up. Everybody's going to want a NAC appliance. That hasn't really been the case, though. So you have all these companies in a very crowded market where people aren't going for the product the way they thought they would. And the reason for that is for a lot of IT shops, NAC is complicated, but the bigger problem is it's also very expensive. And a lot of IT shops are pretty good at finding ways to cook up a pretty good access management program using the tools that they already have. So it tends to be a harder sell for upper management. So this is the first example of a company trying to distance itself from being a NAC vendor and go in another direction.
All right. Well, let's start out on the reports of spyware being used at Sears.com. A researcher at CA discovered that people who join a specific community there, and we'll talk a little bit more about what that community is, they were forced to download software that ended up tracking them. Forced probably isn't the right word. Dennis, why don't you talk a little bit about what this really is?
Yeah, the only thing that seems to be in dispute here is how folks join this community. I think the name of it is the My SHC community on Sears' website. And essentially what it is just a little community where you can talk to other Sears customers about, you know, products and that kind of thing. And it's a way to get people to register on the website like anything else. But Sears is also selecting a subset of that community to, they say, voluntarily receive this tracking software that tracks their, not just what they do on the Sears site, but what they do on the entire internet. It tracks where they go, what they do on those sites, how long they stay on those sites.
Monitors secure sessions, which may include shopping or banking sites.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which is the real problem here. I mean, honestly, who cares if people know if you're going to Amazon or whatever? But the real problem is if they're monitoring secure sessions, that's, I mean, let's talk about the privacy and security problems
parses the header section of personal emails. Right.
There's no dispute here that Sears is doing this. What their CA says that you can sign up for this without really understanding what you're getting into because the disclosure isn't very clear. And Sears is saying, oh, no. You have to receive an email invitation. There's very clear description of what the software does. You have to voluntarily download it. You can always uninstall it and all of that. CA and a spyware expert at Harvard Business School who looked at it as well say, not so much. There's no way to stop the install once you've started it. It's very difficult to remove. And it also has all the characteristics of spyware, and it's produced by a company called ComScore, which has had its issues with the federal government in terms of installing spyware on users' computers. And the VP at Sears, who is part of this program, used to work at ComScore. So there's a lot of connections there that don't look so good. The problem that I have with this, aside from the obvious, is that companies still don't get that this isn't what customers want. What, you know, this isn't the kind of interaction they're looking for from their retailers.
But these customers apparently want it. Apparently they're dumb enough to actually say, yes, we want this software. I want this software.
Well, some of them I think did volunteer for it. They said, you know, okay, I don't do anything malicious on the internet. I don't really, you know, if Sears wants to track my web usage and it's going to help them sell more products, I don't really care. But if I just sign up for this community and then all of a sudden I find this software on my computer without really knowing what I signed up for, that's a big problem.
Yeah, this is an example of a company hiding behind the fact that, you know, we have this end-user license agreement. You click that you agree to it. Everything's perfectly legal. But one of the common complaints that I hear when it comes to these agreements is that they're steeped in legalese. They're not clear at all. It's easy to click yes without realizing what you've just accepted.
Yeah, and based on the analysis that I read, it seemed like in the EULA, the only information that disclosed this tracking software was buried so deep that it was almost impossible to find, even if you were looking at the EULA very closely. I mean, based on the CA post, my impression was that just the way it was phrased, maybe Dennis can comment on this more in a second, was that even the CA researcher was a little bit taken aback when he, came upon it initially. So I think when a security researcher is a little bit surprised in that nature, I mean, how does the average end user stand a chance? Also, the only other thing I wanted to point out was that regardless of the connections to ComScore, which says a lot in itself, certainly, it really surprises me that after the whole Sony rootkit incident of last year, where you would think that had enough bad press attached to it that any organization would do whatever it, would see that as a lesson and say, okay, let's make sure we steer clear of spyware or rootkits or anything of that nature as much as we can, that, a company as reputable as Sears has been would seemingly dive right into the practice with both feet.
Well, in October, experts predicted that the storm's reign would continue, and we saw variants of the Trojan throughout the year. On top of that, the botnets are growing ever more sophisticated, and we hear about that every year as well. And they're more difficult. Researchers say they're finding it difficult to track and detect. This begs the question, is 2008 the year of a massive cyber attack? Or is it really more about making money? Eric, why don't you weigh in on this first?
Well, I think it remains to be seen for the large part, considering we're only a few days into 2008. But I think it would be quite ironic if we continue on the path we're on. Thinking back to 2007, really one of the big stories for the year, despite the pervasiveness of the stormworm, was that it seemed like malware, for the large part, was going away as we had known it in the past. But just within the past few weeks, we've had quite an impressive malware comeback in terms of thinking about the Sears spyware, the MBR rootkit, the numerous botnets that Dennis has covered recently, as well as the recent outbreak of ransomware that I know Bill and Dennis have both covered on our blog. So I think when you look at all that together, you might say, wow, maybe this is the start of something this year.
I don't know. We tend to be a soundboard sometimes for what comes out of the mouths of security researchers. And I know you, Dennis, really have a connection to some of these guys. Try to be as honest as you can here. Are these guys really making more of it than it really is?
No. In fact, I think in some cases, they're not shouting loudly enough about some of this stuff. For example, the Nugash Trojan that I wrote about a few weeks ago, although the network looks like it's been abandoned at this point, when it was up and running, the sophistication and stealthiness of that network was beyond what anybody else had seen up until that point. And I know that Dave Dietrich, who had done a lot of research on Nugash, had sort of tried to get the word out about it, talking to various small groups and behind closed doors about it. And I was in one of those meetings, and everyone who was listening to that talk was just sort of looking around and shaking their heads and saying, under their breath, we can't stop this. There's nothing we can do about this. We don't have the resources. So to answer your original question about whether this is the year of some massive cyber attack, I tend to think that
the potential for those kind of things is a little bit overblown. I think that
because we've heard the doomsday theory.
Absolutely, yeah. The digital Pearl Harbor type thing for 6 or 7 years now.
Actually, it would be kind of nice, right? We'd have a little break from things.
We could just all use Macs at that point. I tend to think that what we're going to see more of is these smaller, really sophisticated attacks that target, you know, a certain segment of the online population instead of, you know, some giant attack from China that takes down, you know, half the American internet, or, you know, takes down a utility, or, you know, something along those lines. Those kind of things, I think, are far less likely to happen than these smaller, more targeted, more lucrative attacks that you see with somebody writing a custom Trojan to attack customers of, you know, Wells Fargo Bank, steal their passwords for, you know, a week or so, gather up as much money as you can, and then move on to Bank of America, you know, whoever's next. That's where the real money is, and that's what a lot of the smart and successful guys are going after right now.
Bill, I was talking to you earlier about this, and you had pretty much the same opinion. You thought that these attacks would be pretty stealthy because it's really just a profit-making operation for these cyber criminals.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't make money off of it if you destroy it. So I think when people talk about a digital Pearl Harbor, they're kind of missing the point of what it has become all about for the bad guys, which is to quietly take over machines and use it to steal. And so I don't see the big cataclysmic event. I see more of what we've been seeing the past year, where you see some websites getting taken over and people visit it, and all of a sudden their credit card information is been taken, and, you know, things like that. But it's, you know, it's the new way of mugging people. So
the other thing is, I didn't mean to sort of discount the possibility of these kind of state-sponsored attacks that you don't necessarily hear a lot about. But if you talk to the right people, they'll tell you that this stuff is definitely going on, both the U.S. government and military, as well as foreign governments and militaries, doing these sort of, whether they're reconnaissance or actually directed attacks, taking down specific targets in other countries, whether they're state-owned networks or privately owned networks. That kind of stuff is absolutely happening. And I think it's going to continue to happen and continue to sort of rise in sophistication and you know, scariness, for lack of a better term.
So you actually think that there are states, nation states, that are leveraging the botnets to conduct these types of operations?
I'm not sure about the botnet part of that, but there's no question that there are countries out there. I would say that China would be at the top of that list. Perhaps countries like Pakistan that maybe don't always have our best interests at heart have very smart people working on projects to, you know, make attacks if and when they become necessary. I mean, China, there have been reports, there have actually been attacks against U.S. government sites from Chinese government-owned computers. You know, whether those computers were owned by hackers at the time or whether the Chinese government was actually directing those attacks is sort of an open question, and that's an easy way for them to say, oh, no, that wasn't us. Those computers were compromised. But there's no question that kind of stuff is going on both from our side and from our adversary side.
Let's move on to the next topic. Analysts have said that NAC and NAP may not be being adopted as quickly as some would like, as vendors would like, for a variety of reasons. Cost is one thing. Now we hear about one NAC vendor, and Bill, you wrote about this, Vernier Networks, which is taking a new approach that includes a name change. Bill, I know you talked a little bit about that at the top of the program. Let's go into it a little bit more detail. Is this Do analysts say that this may be an ongoing trend where security NAC vendors in particular will have to change their strategy moving forward?
Yes, they're definitely expecting some kind of shakeout because the NAC market has gotten enormously crowded. And, you know, as I said before, because a lot of companies just assumed that everybody was going to want one of these NAC appliances, and that hasn't come to pass because it's very expensive for some, it's complicated for others, and most IT shops have found other ways to deal with access management. So I think you are going to see more companies do what Vernier has done. Maybe not the same exact thing, relaunching under a different name, but you know, perhaps working on new product lines or working more on management tools, which is the thing that's in hot demand. You know, tools that IT professionals can use to manage all the different security products that they're running. So, and analysts always come back with that's what security companies really need to do to be able to continue to survive.
Well, let's call this like it is for a minute, if we will. By and large, don't we think the NAC market as a whole is a sham at this point? I mean, is there any real evidence to suggest that there's going to be a broad adoption of NAC products, devices, anytime soon? I mean, I don't know. I haven't really seen that. But what I think is going to happen is we're at the point where there are a lot of NAC vendors out there who just can't sustain themselves anymore. So I think we're going to probably see a big market crash or consolidation in terms of NAC, and the big guys like Microsoft and Cisco are going to take over, and then only after that point, you know, when they can kind of get their whole NAC ducks in a row, if you will, you know, is the whole NAC ecosystem going to make sense, and then the adoption will take off. I don't know.
I don't know. I do see that scenario where we're going to have more consolidation in that area, but you talk a little bit about adoption. Companies are starting out small. I mean, we are hearing of cases where satellite offices, companies are starting with satellite offices and then working from there because it is such a technical and such a possibly a major overhaul for many of these companies. They don't want to start with this massive investment. They've got to start out small.
Yeah, I think that's true. And the other part of that equation is what Eric mentioned briefly, is that these smaller NAC vendors see Microsoft and Cisco coming and are sort of scurrying to get back under the fridge before those guys come in. I mean, Microsoft, once Longhorn hits the market later this year, that's going to complete their NAP offering. And at that point, they're going to be able to, which I think is part of the reason that some potential customers have been waiting to deploy Vista in large numbers, mm-hmm. is they're waiting for Longhorn so that they can just do it all at once. That'll also complete Microsoft's NAP offering, so that it'll be very difficult for a lot of these smaller vendors to compete with that, where Microsoft can just say, hey, it's already built into the OS. Why even bother with this appliance or some third-party software when we've already got it for you?
So what you're leading to here is this whole area around standards development, around NAC and NAP. The vendors, the Ciscos and the Junipers, needing to adopt some sort of standard. Aren't there some standard groups out there around?
Well, there's
establishing a connection between NAC and NAP.
Sort of, yeah. There's a partnership between Microsoft and Cisco to build connectors between NAP and Cisco's NAC.
So how old is that?
They interoperate.
That I mean, there hasn't been
year and
much
a half,
news from that.
A year and a half, probably. They've done it. They've got them working together pretty well. There still remains a few hurdles, especially with Cisco stuff, because a lot of it, depending on whether you want to buy their appliance or you want to go with their software version, which they're kind of downplaying, because that requires you to sort of upgrade all of your Cisco gear to get to the NAC compliant level. Now they're selling their I forget what the appliance is called now. It might just be the Cisco NAC appliance is their big push. But I think the standards, I'm not sure that there will ever be standards for that. But you know, the Trusted Computing Group has their Trusted Network Connect, I think, is the name of their specification that they have out there, their sort of reference architecture. And Microsoft and Cisco are actually working fairly well together on this. So there may be some hope yet for
for enterprises that are looking to deploy this without a whole lot of pain.
I went to a session at a conference last year where a number of CISOs said that they're just having a hard time explaining when they go for a budget to at least begin a project, explaining to executives at a higher level that, you know, what exactly the benefits are and where the value is out of it, you know, once everything is said and done.
Yeah, that's a very important point. When you think about how difficult it often is for security managers to talk to upper level executives just about the overall value of security, when you try to explain more complex topics like NAC, which even, you know, within the security industry has different definitions sometimes, it's naturally going to be more difficult. But, you know, boiling this down, I think ultimately, if you're an enterprise and you don't know whether or not NAC is going to have a tangible benefit for you, then why spend tens of thousands of dollars with a smaller, you know, third-party vendor to buy and implement their product when maybe you can wait a year, wait 18 months, and Cisco is going to have it baked into their routers and Microsoft's going to have it baked into their OS. So, you know, then ultimately it's going to be much easier and potentially work even better. So,
is this where appliance vendors actually may have an edge, where they can sort of simplify NAC and make it easier to sell?
That's what they tell you. I'm not sure.
You know, just set it and forget it.
Right. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. And the other problem there is that every security vendor has been selling appliances for the last 5 or 6 years, and these IT departments are sort of, there's a lot of fatigue about putting in another inline appliance that just, you know, they don't want that. They want this sort of utopia of UTM where everything is in one box and they can just sort of set it and forget it. And that's not the case with NAC. You know, obviously with the appliances and with the software versions, it's a lot more difficult to get going because there's so many touch points you have to deal with. But I think in a small office setting, those appliances work pretty well, depending on what you want them to do. But for the large enterprise, I'm not sure that they're gaining all that much adoption.
Well, with that ends this edition of Security Squad. Be sure to check out our previous podcast by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For Dennis Fisher, Eric Perizzo, and Bill Brenner, I'm Rob Westerveld. Have a great day.